Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Bullet's been dodged.
You're talking about the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker, I think.
I'm not getting drunk this episode.
I'm having a beer.
That's fine. That's just fine.
It'll make me kind of burpy, not unbelievably burpy, the way I would be if we had gotten to that Morn Hammered.
I am editing an episode of Star Trek Burpcast as we speak.
Oh, yeah, that was our Talaxian Champagne episode. That's a burpy episode.
You know, Descript does a good job of removing placeholder words. Does not do a good job with flatulence. It's something I'm going to have to take up with their programmers over on their,
right,
on their Discord.
Yeah, we are on square 97 of the game of buttholes right now.
That's right.
I wonder, does rolling the dice now give us a 50% chance of hitting a Morn Hammered? We can't overshoot, right? It forces us to do the Morn Hammered if we roll three, yeah, or up.
Yeah, that is how it goes.
So it's more than a 50% chance.
Yeah. I mean, a two is the only roll that we can get that gives us a regular ep.
Yeah. Boy,
that's a 1 out of 6 chance.
People are going to absolutely hate us.
People already absolutely hate us.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even remember what they were saying, but somebody on the Reddit just said something like, absolutely cruel about us. And I was like, I cannot imagine belonging to a Reddit about a show that I hate as much as this person clearly hates our show.
Yeah.
Like, this person clicked subscribe on a Reddit of a show they don't like. What the fuck?
I think you just described the internet and just what people like to do there.
I guess so.
I spent a good long time off of the internet this last week.
Yeah.
Felt nice. Felt like a good thing.
Yeah.
And then I came back and immediately fought with someone on Reddit.
Did you really?
They said something about us not really trying on the show anymore, and I took great umbrage with that because you can say just about anything about me or the show.
Yeah.
But don't you fucking dare say that we don't work hard on it. I think that is irrefutably false.
It is irrefutably false. It's in many ways harder work than the real jobs we left to do this.
I fought with that person on Reddit when I was editing an episode on a plane flying home from a vacation last night. So I was in a place.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully the work we put in doesn't seem strenuous. Like, you don't want it to feel effortful. You want the listening experience to be like, wow, they just tossed that off. Amazing.
Right. It takes a lot of work to sound this dumb. It really does.
Man, well, jerks on the internet, eh? What are you going to do?
You know what? It's fun to be doing a thing that matters to people in both directions, right?
That's a good way of thinking about it. I need to come back to that more often.
I'm just talking about Star Trek with my friend. That's the resting state.
Yeah.
No better partner to that experience than one Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
The man at the helm of today's episode. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Episode 7. Perturition.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning to round.
Do you think Frakes was just tossing off the title of this episode?
No way.
Hey, directing a new episode, Parturition?
I don't think anyone outside of the writer had a hand in naming this episode.
Yeah, it's one of those rare, like, one writer credit episodes on Star Trek Voyager.
I feel like when you're Jonathan Frakes, famously playing the part of consent fetishist Will Riker.
Yeah.
Probably requesting a baby episode to direct, mm-hmm. off and on, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, if there's one with a weird puppet, throw it my way.
Star Trek has a mixed history with the puppetry, as we'll find out later on in this episode.
Yeah.
Is it mixed even, or is it just all bad?
Depends. I guess it depends on how you think about puppetry.
We open this episode, and it is loud and scary. We're in shuttlecraft race.
Yeah. In media butthole.
Yeah.
Hey, Paris and Kes are in a bunk bed. Neelix must be pissed.
Yeah. Really plants the seed right up top. What are they doing together on the shuttle?
Yeah.
And why does Kes know so much about shuttlecraft shit?
She's studying up. You know, we just celebrated her second birthday in the last episode. And we've talked a lot about Kes recently. One thing that really like hit me like a ton of bricks that I kind of forgot to bring up on the last episode is if she's 2 years old, like her capacity to learn is really amazing. Like,
yeah,
I think that humans know like a million words or something. Like, I think most people walking around like know a million words of their language. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
You and I probably average that, but you're more like 1,300,000 and I'm like 700,000.
I may be off on the number, but it's like a really, really high number like that. And so like the thing that's amazing about it is how many words per day you have to learn to get to that over the course of your childhood. And like if you're two and like as far as anyone can tell, a fully like cognitively developed adult that's able to learn about like shuttlecraft emergency procedures also, her brain is amazing.
Do you think if you sat down and your project was, I'm going to write every word I know, do you think that's a project that a person could actually do?
I would advise against it. I think you could probably do a lot more productive shit with your time.
I don't know. I think I'm going to try it.
I mean, you learned a new word today, Adam. Parturition.
Parturition. Parturition.
Yeah.
Parturition.
Ankylosaur.
An episode title that could have gone on the one where Kes develops a baby bag on her back, but right. Instead they saved it for this one for some reason.
Kes, having just had that significant birthday, you want to bring the birthday kid to an amusement park if you can, if that's possible.
Flight simulator.
Yeah, and this is like the next best thing, right? Like Flight Simulator 2371, the latest and greatest from the Microsoft Corporation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you want to get one of those graphics cards that's almost impossible to find because of the Bitcoin mining concerns that are buying them up.
If you want to actually fly the shuttlecraft, you have to spend a lot of in-game money. What it's going to do in Flight Simulator 2371 is it's going to start you on a Cessna. There's going to be no complex airplane scenery at the airport around you. Just going to be line drawn out of hell.
She's doing her training flight. Tom Paris is Flight Instructor Paris, throwing some curveballs at her.
Clogging someone's plasma injectors is a dirty trick.
Kind of a dark moment in this interaction when, you know, Paris resets the game after she wins the first time. And he's like, now you get to learn how to land. And Kes is like, I don't need to learn how to land.
And he's like, oh, all right. Well,
huh?
Nothing concerning there. I'm not going to tell anybody about that. And she's like, good. I'd prefer you didn't. And he's like, well, I won't.
Yeah, I'd prefer you just keep that part to yourself.
And then a banger gets dropped on the shuttle. And she suggestively falls into his arms.
Very fun bit of Austin Powersing she does here.
I made a sexy mistake. And the shuttle is being attacked by ticks. I didn't think we'd see any ticks on Voyager.
They leave the holodeck, you know, like almost arm in arm, but not. They're like arm swinging. They're so happy, you know, like they had a great time in there.
They're a couple of good time buddies having a real fun hang with each other. And that does not wash with the creepy man that is lingering in the hallway nearby.
Yeah.
Neelix was very concerned that something untoward might be going on in that bunk bed, and he sees evidence to confirm his deepest fears.
Neelix narrows his eyes, taking great umbrage with what he's seeing.
I thought an interesting choice to, like, episode order-wise, I think... Like, I guess the last episode they'd had shot and on the shelf for months by the time they made this one. And there's that interesting interchange between Neelix and Chakotay about whence jealousy, right? Like, the fact that you're vulnerable with this person that you love and worried that they could hurt you. And now, like, the knife is getting twisted. It's getting worse for Neelix, not better.
Her perfume is all over Paris's uniform now. It's weird. Like, we're told Kes is such an empath, but she can't seem to tell how Neelix is at boil. He's about to boil over.
Yeah.
Over this.
Was she rocking the medallion? Did she have the locket from the last episode?
That's a great question.
I don't think she does.
We need some locket continuity here.
Yeah. Lack of locket continuity is a big problem on Star Trek Voyager. Also, lack of haircut continuity for the captain.
Yeah.
We check in with Janeway in her ready room. She has changed up her Luke.
Good news and bad.
During this meeting with Chakotay, we learn that food reserves are down 30%, and she's cut 30% of her hair in solidarity with that figure.
Yeah. They have an M-class planet on long-range sensors that they think has some promising readings, lots of proteins and amino acids, so that's good. They got to go check it out.
I mean, a lot is made over the many haircuts of a Catherine Janeway throughout the series. Because
Picard only ever had the one.
It's true.
I guess Sisko had two. He had the medium, and then he just went to shaved, I guess.
It made me wonder if they made a very specific choice to not give Kate Mulgrew the Genevieve Bujold hair, which she now has in this episode. Like, she's got Genevieve Bujold's haircut.
Do you think it's the wig? Do you think it could be the same wig?
Can you just wear another person's wig and have it work on screen? I thought wigs were made for specific heads.
I don't know. Write in.
Well, a lot of shade is thrown at this planet that Chakotay is proposing they go visit. It may or may not have what they're looking for. They don't know that because the atmosphere is so fogged up. They're only going to be able to tell if it's got what their ship craves by going there. And so they set a course for what they're calling Planet Hell.
Planet Hell. What a name.
It's a place that Cybok would definitely not want to go. The exact opposite direction.
Yeah.
In fact, no one calls it Shakari. No one calls it the Source. No one calls it Heaven or Eden, Ben.
What does the devil need with a starship?
Klingons do not call it Quitu. For the Romulans, it is most definitely not known as Vortivore, and the Andorian word is still unpronounceable.
It may be the home of Veklar.
The guardian of great ore, where the dishonored go when they die.
The return of Veklar would be a great moment.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Give me more Veklar.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that make terrifying sounds, we go from Veklar to Kim's clarinet.
Yeah, fortunately, we're saved by the bell. Tom Paris rings his door. And is surprised to find Harry Kim in there practicing clarinet.
That was you? That was me.
Yeah, I mean, when the scene begins, Paris can't seem to tell where the sound is coming from. I thought that was an interesting introduction to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there some sort of scattering field around the living quarters on the ship that would make it so that the directionality of sound would be suppressed a little bit?
I mean, Harry Kim better hope that's what's going on, because I bet he makes a lot of noise in his quarters with the various crew members he invites in there.
Yeah, not all of them are sisters.
Harry Kim saved up replicator rations to replicate this thing.
That means his clarinet is made out of chocolate or something. It's totally edible.
Paris just takes a bite out of it. Nice, Harry.
Paris does that thing that comics hate. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're a comedian? Tell me a joke.
Right.
Which is what he does to Kim and his clarinet. Play me a tune, clarinet honker. And so Kim does just that, but Paris wants to switch the station pretty fast. He's not liking what he hears.
Yeah, Paris is in a bad mood. I really like this scene. This is a scene we get to stay in for a long time. And I think that there's something kind of unusual about a main cast Star Trek character like going this deep into their inner struggle in this casual a way. I really liked it. I liked just two buds like talking about feelings. Like Paris is saying, like, I have been really trying to just be a good friend of Kes, and then having her in my arms, it unlocked something in me, and I, like, can't kick the thought out of my head, and I really don't want it in there because...
She reminded me of my mother, all right, no doubt about it.
Kes. I know.
I know that that's, like, drama that this ship doesn't need and that I don't need and that she doesn't need.
Am I making any sense here?
It feels like a reversal of Star Trek gender roles that we frequently get, where two lady friends are talking about a third guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to see Paris and Kim chop it up here a little bit about Paris's secret feelings.
Yeah. And I think a funny scene, too, because, like, you know, like the argument that Tom Paris is making is I'm really bumming out about this, so I need you to play some sad music to, like, set the mood. And and then Kim insisting on playing chipper music.
Kim has a fairly insightful observation about Paris that is related to Will Riker's consent fetishism. Maybe Paris is a rejection fetishist.
Yeah.
With how often he makes decisions that lead him right into those conclusions.
Why do I do this to myself?
Yeah, like there is a kind of like victimhood that he expects life to subject him to, and so he kind of like engineers situations to thrust him into victimhood in a way.
Right. Kim is really honking on his clarinet like he hasn't played since being stationed on the Voyager.
Yeah.
And his embouchure is still like super strong after all of his work with the Delaney sisters, luckily, so.
Yeah. He's kept his lips really malleable.
Yeah.
I also really liked, you know, just a subtle thing in the scene, but Frakes has the camera just kind of plunge down through the floor of the deck and down into Tuvok's quarters, one below, where he's hitting the ceiling with a broom handle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We cut to Neelix and Kes at dinner, and really interesting performance here by Ethan Phillips, like straining against his inner feelings in the moment, like being... You run into this sometimes, like maybe you're just in your own head about a thing, but you still have to perform socially.
Right.
Neelix is performing socially in this scene, and it isn't until the very end of it that Kes realizes that something is very, very wrong inside him.
She sees through it finally. Such an interesting scene, too, because Kim and Paris are being really vulnerable with each other, and Neelix is trying to suppress everything.
Yeah.
And that contrast really feels profound when you cut from one to the other in this rapid a way.
And I really like the cut from this scene, too. It's something like, we don't get a verbal acknowledgement of this. We're on to the next right afterwards when they arrive at Planet Hell. And I like that. I like wondering what's going on there.
It's a scene that really moves and feels important, but also like leaves you in that ambiguity of not resolving itself. And the on the bridge, they're looking at Planet Hell, and they get interrupted by Doc Holliday, who admits that he's been dropping eaves on the bridge crew. Whenever they do anything, he's basically listening in to see if he can kind of get out ahead of the medical issues that may arise. And they feel a little their privacy has been betrayed or something.
I am programmed to be discreet.
I'm sure.
Yeah, they feel that way because Doc Holliday was like, sorry, I'm a little late for arriving at Planet Hell. I was just listening in on a very awkward conversation that Neelix and Kes were having over dinner.
You guys won't believe this, but Neelix still thinks she's standing up in closets with sailors. And they're like, really, Doc Holliday? That seems like a really dated term. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, it's less about the conditions on the planet that the doc is providing liniments for them to use in an effort to solve them than it is the idea that the doc can be anywhere listening to anyone at any time.
Yeah. The case he's making, though, is that Planet Hell should really have been called Planet Itchy as Hell. Because this mixture of proteins and amino acids in the atmosphere really going to irritate the skin of anybody that beams down there.
Perhaps you'd like an analgesic cream.
Is there any escape from the doctor as you know it? If you put your comm badge in a drawer, do you think that that gets him out of your life? Or is he like ceiling cat watching you jack it?
I mean, in some ways, like, I guess I wouldn't mind because he's kind of a program.
He can't feel titillation.
Right.
If he did, he would be doing nothing but banging Sandrine in Sandrines.
Yeah. Which he may be doing also, you know? Like, we don't know if he can be in there at the same time as he's in Six Bay.
Could he send the lower half of his body to the holodeck and then remain with his upper half in Six Bay to do his doctorly business?
Yeah.
So they kind of around the horn on the bridge a little bit. The doctor having provided his cream, BLT confirming no transporting allowed. And don't count on communications working on this one either. We're setting up the conditions for a difficult mission ahead.
Yeah.
And from there we cut to Kim and Paris entering the mess hall. And this is awkward because Kes is inside.
I think I'll just eat later.
The implication is that if a Kes is eating alone, you're going to want to sit next to her if you're her friend.
Yeah.
But Paris is coming up with a way to avoid her that involves work. And this just sets up a very awkward moment to follow.
Yeah, the takes that Frakes gets here are very funny because they're kind of like, you know, they're standing in the doorway. Kes turns around and notices them and waves at them like, I don't know, they're meeting up at the Grand Canyon after months of not seeing each other or something.
I mean, Jonathan Frakes is such a student of the human condition, such an open-hearted person. I think he can tell maybe more than most, you know, what a stranger might be going through, what they might need in a particular moment.
Yeah.
And I think when you're around someone as receptive as he is, you can't help but be drawn to them.
Yeah, you just want to soak that energy up and spend what fleeting time you might have in its presence really making the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, to give away an opportunity like that.
To squander.
Oh, to use one of your million words. See, I was using two cheapies.
Yeah. But you could upgrade it to first class.
I know. Yeah, you know I would have sat right next to squander, Ben. You know that. Would have started a long conversation with that word.
But, you know, in the scenario where you were on the plane and then somebody asked to trade seats with you or offered to trade seats with you and then you got to sit next to squander, wouldn't you feel a little bit weird about it at that point? And squander's already got the headphones in and is, like, doing something that is clearly work.
So they're serving pasta in the mess hall, and we're told instead of angel hair pasta, it's actual hair.
It's hair.
And red sauce.
Yeah.
It looks delicious.
This has like that like suburban American spaghetti look to it, that it's just like a bowl of nudes with jar of Prego dumped on top of it.
Call the pasta police.
But that can be really satisfying sometimes.
The common joke thread with Neelix is that is the expectation thread. The, oh, you expected this? Well, instead it's this.
Yeah. And it's pretty fun to have that joke layered on top of I fucking hate you and I want you to eat this gross thing.
Yeah. I wasn't sure in my mind what threatening pasta serving would look like. But you get that here.
Ethan Phillips found that gear, man. So the strategy is going to be, we're not going to sit with Kes. We're going to make a play of, like, we've got very important bridge officer shit to discuss, and that's not really something Kes is privy to. So Kim and Paris are sitting down when Chakotay calls Kim up to the bridge, and now Paris is sitting there with his back to Kes. Kes is pissed that he is not sitting with her. Neelix is pissed that they are, like, making a show of not sitting with each other and, you know, playing him for the fool. And so Kes storms out, Neelix boils over and comes and splatters pasta into Tom Paris's chair.
What the hell are you doing?
What I like about this scene is how grounded in awkward reality it is. If you are taking this from the perspective of Neelix, and you are seeing two people that you suspect are hooking up treating each other in a sort of fake coldness.
Yeah.
A performative coldness.
Yeah. Pretending to be strangers.
It definitely would make you paranoid. And Neelix walks from behind the counter and challenges Paris about it. And then before you know it, it's a food fight.
Yeah. They are brawling all over and totally soaked in sauce when they get called up to the ready room. Almost like the captain knows what they're doing.
I mean, when you're rolling around covered in spaghetti sauce on a carpeted floor on a set.
Yeah, yeah.
All I could think about was the reset.
The reset is brutal, yeah.
Yeah.
My friend who is a costumer for television in New York, and I watched The Hurt Locker one time, and there's a scene where he's in his full Marine, you know, field kit, and he gets in the shower and is washing blood and bits of bone off of himself. She was like, thinking about it from a work standpoint, like, how do you fucking have, like, you probably have to have like 10 of that costume ready to go, ready for Renner to change into to do another take of that scene, because that's how many times you're going to probably have to do it.
What's fun is to think that, you know, not only the challenges that are inherent in this scene, but when we cut to the next scene after Neelix and Paris have been called into the principal's office by Captain Janeway, they're standing in a place with food stuck to their chest that could at any moment, like, peel off, like a noodle falls off or a piece of red sauce. Like, are they standing on top of a piece of tarp?
I don't know. Like, it's so well done. Like, I almost feel like they might have molded, like, rubber pasta and, like...
Like the display outside a Japanese restaurant?
Yeah. Because it's, like, jiggling and, like, doing a lot of the things you would predict except for falling off. And it's really consistent from cut to cut.
Yeah.
This scene is harder to pull off than I think the average home viewer might realize. And it's really well done.
It makes me wonder if for continuity reasons you don't, like, put the two actors into a couple of wheelchairs after the roll around scene and take them directly to the next stage for this shot with Janeway. Yeah. I don't know any other way to do it.
Yeah.
Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
So what she has called them up there to tell them is that they are going to be the two people going on the away mission to planet Hell. And the away mission has to be a shuttlecraft mission because of the weird energy stuff in the atmosphere. So it's kind of a lock-in at the rec center for Tom Paris and Neelix.
I mean, everything about the mission makes logical sense to pair them together. These are the two right people for this job.
He's our best pilot, and you're our expert on edible plant species in this quadrant.
But Janeway detects the awkwardness between them.
There's coffee in that personal problem.
Because they're both covered in spaghetti sauce. That's the obvious.
Yeah.
The more subtle is that they won't even look at each other. And she's like, what the fuck, guys? They can't wiggle out of it, though.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of the episode, maybe it was the one that introduced Reg Barkley in TNG, where Geordi was like, yeah, I just hate having him on my team and I can't get along with him. And Picard was like, find a way to do it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't have time to fucking solve your interpersonal issues with your fucking crew.
It's not his job. That's a great callback.
So that is basically where Janeway leaves it with them. She says, like, get back to being cool with each other. That's an order.
What slightly strains credulity for the rest of the episode is that they're both made to wear these uniforms throughout the mission.
Yeah, they never wash the pasta sauce off.
Yeah, they have to get right on that shuttle and go.
She says, as far as I'm concerned, like Castro not shaving his beard until the revolution is over, you must leave the pasta sauce on until your interpersonal problems are resolved.
Yeah, they basically go from 2-on-1 meeting to a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
To really make clear, you guys, I cannot emphasize this enough, the rules of this conflict that we're about to get into. No transporting.
Yeah.
At all. Very difficult to communicate. All right, remember this. But also, probably not important right now or ever, a semi-regular window in the atmosphere that we could transport if we absolutely have to.
But they may only last for a matter of minutes.
So they blow out of this meeting, and it's like speed walking that everyone does to disperse, including like Paris speed walking past Kes.
Yeah.
And behind him, Neelix slowing up.
Yeah.
When Kes wants to ask what the hell happened.
Kes has heard the rumors. I mean, she smelled the conflict brewing, which is why she hightailed it out of Neelix's restaurant in the first place. But now Neelix is ashamed of his actions and ashamed of all the marinara on his shirt.
Yeah.
And he won't even give her the time of day. He won't explain himself to her. And she storms into Six Bay just totally pissed off. And the doctor is like, hey, are you sick or something?
I really love the blow-off transference that happens here, because Kes gets blown off by Neelix in the scene before, and then she wheels around and blows off the doc.
Yeah, yeah.
On her way to work.
And he's like trying to like prescribe her medication or something, and she's like, fuck you.
I was a little confused at how this scene played out for this reason. This entire conversation about people being attracted to Kes is happening between the doc and Kes.
Yeah. The doc, who is attracted to Kes,
who is also describing the ways in which that attraction can appear that clearly was not observable to Kes. And the way that they talk to each other throughout this scene is kind of whispered in hushed tones, the way that two lovers would talk to each other.
There may be a few things you don't know to look for in a man.
If this were any other TV show, I might think that the doc was describing himself.
Yeah.
When describing Paris's change in states when he's around Kes.
Yeah.
Was that intentional?
I don't know. It's a wild scene. I was very distracted also by the fact that like almost all of the dialogue appears to have been re-recorded later.
And yeah.
I don't know why that would be. These are shot very intimately. Like it's mostly like very tight close-ups in this scene. Yeah. So I don't know why they would have blown the audio. Like, was there like an accident with the audio recorder or something? Like, it seems crazy that they would have lost it.
I mean, the big takeaway is that Kes has had too few reps to recognize when people are into her.
Yeah.
And because he's a doctor, he should be trusted.
He's basically saying dudes getting sprung off of you is a incurable disease. There's nothing I can do to help.
There's no hypo spray I've stocked in here that'll do anything about that.
Yeah.
Cut to the shuttlecraft en route to planet Hell, and it's so cold inside you can see their breath. This is Neelix and Paris at the controls.
Yeah.
It is icy.
It's icy. I thought that they did a nice job with the lighting, making it chilly lighting on top of being a chilly mood. They're out of communication range, so it's time to like open up the conflict again.
This is an argument without a satisfying conclusion because there's an emergency that happens.
Warning, vectored exhaust controls malfunctioning.
With what we learn later about Kes and her wanting to break up with both of them if they were to survive the mission.
Yeah.
I kind of wondered if they would have found Kes's sabot in the engines here. Maybe she's trying to take them both off the board.
Yeah.
Hence the word sabotage.
Maybe it's the Dr. Sabot. He would be a suspect, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah. But Hollow Sabot are going to disappear the second the shuttlecraft leaves the six bay.
Hollow Sabot contain the feet, I bet. At the same time.
So Neelix knows his way around a shuttlecraft a little bit. He has also done the training program, though not with the expert tutelage of Tom Paris. So he's helping a little bit in the emergency crash landing. But like up on the bridge, they're like, ooh, we're getting like pretty spotty telemetry from that shuttle. And it does not look great in terms of like their velocity and trajectory.
The camera direction during the emergency as things spin out of control is insane.
It's like, about as bangery as the camera can get without just like completely losing your ability to see anything that's going on.
It's so wild that it made me wonder how close the camera op came to falling. It's just everywhere. It makes it almost difficult to understand what's happening in the frame. It's so whacked out.
Yeah. It's like a later period Bourne film fight scene. You're just like, what the fuck even happened? There's a magazine and a pen and the guy's dead now?
That was the scene in Good Will Hunting that really affected me most when Matt Damon told the story about his dad having a magazine and a pen
yeah,
and a wrench on the table. Made him choose.
Why the wrench? Because fuck him. That's why.
So we catch up with the shuttle just pancaked on the surface of this planet.
Yeah.
It is really fucked up. It's kind of surprising that a landing this hard is survivable, but they're both fine. Like they're not even bruised.
This looks like the frame of an Aliens Star Trek The Next Generation crossover where the shuttle crashes on LV-426. You know, like it's stormy and gray out there.
Yeah. Or not the last LV-426 image that we get in this episode also.
It's true. Paris and Neelix are fine.
They have
plugged in the sand and there's no blood.
No muss, no fuss. They don't even have to get those like silver Mylar jackets and pants out like Quark and Odo did that one time.
They're starting to get the vapors from the vapors, and all they have to defend against them is like one of those bottled water misters.
Yeah, yeah.
That rich people use.
It's like bug repellent, and they're like, it's not really working. Ah, this is the kind that doesn't have DEET in it. Fuck! This is that natural shit. That doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, the argument they started on their way down hasn't ended because they can't agree on a course of action. Neelix is on team stay with the shuttle to be rescued. And Paris is like, we can't stay on the shuttle. We're going to itch ourselves to death. They need to seek refuge in the Star Trek caves. And because Paris has rank, he pulls that rank, and that's where they go.
Rank gets pulled, and they pack up and head out. And it's like LV-426 if there were agaves around.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of funny to see like plants that you see in like very hot, arid climates on this like dark, smoky cloud planet.
Get ready for an adventure, and this just isn't any old adventure either. Steam is involved.
Now that's a nice place to spend an afternoon.
It's truly Planet Hell's Gold they've got down there.
What?
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
To get that
platinum,
get that
low enlargement.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What now?
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Kes is in her quarters at the bumming out table.
Nothing cheers up a bum out like a clarinet player.
Yeah.
She sort of waves him away like he's some kind of fucked up mariachi.
His mood when he comes in is very funny, because he's like, he's coming in to say like, hey, your boyfriend and the guy that you might be flirting with have been lost, and we have lost contact with them on the surface of this planet. But he's kind of like smiling at her, and I was like, oh, Harry, like, give her a minute before you put the moves on.
I don't like it.
Sort of back burner that potential there, Harry Kim.
He's the one that Neelix is never going to see coming, but...
You have plenty to do on the ship, buddy.
Yeah, so he's explaining that, hey, like, we're still working on this. But when we cut around, we don't see her face for, like, a long time in the scene. And when we cut to her, it's clear that she's been weeping. And it's very incongruous, like, how, like, enthusiastic and smiley Harry Kim is relative to Kes when we see what her face looks like.
I mean, the reality of her situation is very painful. The idea of seeing someone for the last time and that being a bad moment.
Yeah.
Like, you never want that to be the last time. So you understand the reason for tears, but you're right. Like, she pivots right into, I'm so going to dump those fuckers if they manage to live through this. Like, you really get the bends emotionally from what she's going through. But maybe that's another quality of her species. Like, if she learns very fast, maybe she processes emotion and trauma really fast.
And realizes when somebody's not the right person for her. Like, I don't want to be stuck to that dude for 6 days when my hands get sticky the next time.
Right. When I'm rocking back sack. I want it to be around someone with a tight embouchure.
Yeah. So seeds get planted in this scene.
Yeah, in more ways than one.
But bangers also get dropped in this scene. Mm-hmm. And Harry Kim responds to Chakotay telling the crew to head to battle stations. And that is a hard cut back down to the planet. We don't know what this battle station situation is because Tom Paris and Neelix are finding a Star Trek cave. And they enter it and, like, without even really discussing it much, just, like, shoot a bunch of rocks down to block the exit. I guess just to, like, seal themselves away from the itchy air.
They'd rather asphyxiate than breathe the mist out there. They do that fun Star Trek thing where they pull some rocks together and heat them up with the phasers. It's always a fun scene.
I always want to see it, and I'm glad we got to see it in this scene. They made a point of showing the close-up of the phaser pointing at each rock and each rock turning red.
Yeah, that's big fun.
That's what you pay for.
They start to argue again before hearing a sound in the dark.
Yeah. Paris claims to have scanned this space for life forms and found nothing, but it appears he's wrong. And the LV-426 vibes really start to peak, you know, real creepy in here in these caves.
I checked for life signs. There weren't any.
There are now.
We're going back and forth at a pretty brisk clip from here, from orbit to planet Hell and back again. There's a ship that's attacked the Voyager in orbit, and it's placed itself in between Voyager and the planet's surface.
Hail them.
They do not respond, Captain.
Like, there's a very brief attempt to communicate, but normally in a Star Trek space battle, there's shoot, stop, and check out your wounds, and then maybe try to hail again.
Yeah.
The shooting recommences, and then you stop, and then ask the other person if they want to give up. Like, there's none of that subsequent communication happening, ever. Yeah.
There's no tomahawk taunt.
I'm saying this because I want to know what the bridge of the ship looks like, just seeing what these creatures look like at the end.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I remember, like, the first time we saw, like, the bridge of a Ferengi ship, and it was just a white void.
You can't rule that out here.
You can't rule that out here, because, like, these guys seem, like, not capable of building a ship based on...
Can't do any worse than white void either. Yeah. Like, you've already reached bottom.
Right. And Paris and Neelix have reached eggs, and they clearly have not seen Alien, because they go right up to them and are scanning them, and one of them starts to open, and they don't sprint for the exits.
Paris has spent enough time in Sandrine's to know that you drape a napkin over your head, and then you take that egg to the dome.
I'd say we're dealing with a sentient life form here, Neelix.
Wow!
And this is the puppetry we referred to. This is a lizard baby creature.
Wet bird lizard are three words that become so much worse when combined. So gross. It looks like that thing they blew up inside Dexter Remick.
Mm.
Like, I bet they just took that puppet and added some scales.
Yeah. They added dino DNA.
It's gross as hell. You really have to be a believer in the puppet, right?
Yeah.
There is a true believer that made this thing and is like, no, guys. We can light this thing and not obscure it. We can put it center frame.
You don't like the puppet? I like the puppet.
Puppet's not strong, man.
As much puppet as you can bring to bear on a sci-fi franchise, I'm here for. I love a puppet.
The puppet's not strong.
It's way stronger than the fucking Lulu puppet.
I think it's equivalent to Lululu.
What?
Yeah. I feel like they just battered Lululu and didn't fry Lululu, and that's what you get here.
Lulu.
So up on the bridge, they're like, okay, we've got a bit of a dilemma here because we need to get Neelix and Paris. Pretty sure their ship has crashed. But we also have this hostile alien that's not talking standing in between us and the planet. So we're going to have to figure out a way to kind of gently shut down their weapons and get past them so that we can get into the atmosphere for this window in the atmosphere that they may be able to use the transporter through.
This window seems contextually to be like an actual window, as if it can be blocked by another ship.
Yeah.
There's some sort of a hole in the atmosphere that the Voyager's trying to get to that the alien ship is blocking.
Hmm. Some sort of hole indeed.
Yeah. Tuvok's got a plan for this.
Yeah.
And you know that plan's going to work.
You are correct.
You know what I'm realizing about this puppet, though, Adam, is that its hands are the hands of the butler character in Scary Movie 2.
The Chris Elliott character?
Yeah, yeah. That's
big fun.
They did reuse those hands. I'm not sure in which direction.
I better use my strong hand.
I mean, I didn't pay much attention to the hands because all I saw was the tiny sticks operating them.
Did you notice the mashed potatoes on the fingers?
Yes, I did.
Nobody can dip their hand into mashed potatoes unauthorized aboard a starship.
I'd like to see the official Star Trek podcast make a Scary Movie 2 reference.
Hey.
Paris, in scanning this gross out, is able to determine that it can think and walk.
Yeah, seems to be a sentient species.
Take any biology class in middle school and they'll tell you, thinking and walking, the two qualities of sentient life.
Mm-hmm. These brains were made for walking, and that's just what they'll do.
Neelix really forms a bond with this thing. He makes the case that leaving it behind may be a death sentence, the way it is for a bird's nest to you and me. You don't just want to touch the eggs.
Yeah. Well, and Paris is kind of arguing for, like, hey, like, we don't really know what the biological imperatives are here. Like, this may be a species where the parents go lay their eggs and then, like, ditch the babies and never come back. Or they might come back but smell us on the baby and not want anything to do with the baby. And Neelix is like, fuck all of that. We're going to make sure that this thing is okay and gets to safety.
Yeah, Neelix would be not someone to invite to an Ordolan dinner at all. He'd be a real bum out in that situation. So, I mean, Neelix, true to his compassionate nature for this thing, like, pulls it out of the egg, swaddles it.
Yeah.
And begins heating it extremely low and slow. A cooking technique that will have that meat falling off the bone in 6 to 8 hours.
Yeah. Weird choice to swaddle a lizard.
I know, right?
I guess if you put like a hand warmer packet in the swaddling with the lizard, that would have an effect. But otherwise, that's nothing.
So Tuvok's plan at disabling the alien ship works, and we cut back to Planet Hell, where this gross bird thing does not want to eat the Starfleet communion wafers. It does, however, like eating Neelix's swaddle.
Yeah.
And this indicates that that the sustenance that this thing needs is going to be outside the walls. Because what is it? Like the fabric's covered in the vapor that was outside?
Yeah, the itchy air got all over their clothes, and the baby wants to eat the itchy air. So
right.
They, like, by shooting the rocks in front of the cave opening, have starved its food supply.
They're really going to want to open up this cave, too, because a newborn dump is ferocious. It is just the worst thing.
Yeah. That'll funk the place up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they got to go move some rocks. And it's real touch and go. Like, they're out in the atmosphere, and it's real smoky, and you think that this baby is going to have enough. But Neelix wants to, like, inject it with cordrazine, and Tom Paris is like, no, we don't want to inject it with cordrazine. It'll go crazy and start killing everyone. That's tricky stuff.
Yeah.
So instead, he uses the hypo spray and is able to concentrate some of the atmosphere.
It's way better than Neelix's plan, which was to gulp some air and then barf it into this baby's face.
So yeah, they get the baby back up on its feet, and they're just kind of waiting around for Mama to show up and pick up the baby.
Two straight episodes where a character is blowing something in another person's mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty interesting,
Sandrine,
huh?
Sandrine was doing that last time, wasn't she?
Yeah. What's that about?
I don't know. They're getting really itchy, though. There's kind of like like three different ticking clocks, right? It's like, is the baby going to survive? Are Neelix and Paris going to get fatally itchy? And is the window going to close? Like, can Voyager beam them out in time? And they start to argue with Janeway. Like, they finally get radio back up, and Janeway's like, okay, we're going to get you out of there. And they're like, no, we're best friends now, and we're trying to save this baby, and we got to, like, we got to buy ourselves a little bit of time.
Did you hear what I just said, Mr. Neelix?
Janeway is really put off by this. She's put a lot of work in taking the ship closer to the planet. They've lost track of this alien ship somewhere out there. She does not want to brook this delay any further.
I really like that the detente between Neelix and Paris is about, hey, we're both kind of losers. No wonder Kes likes us so much.
Right.
She really has a thing for, like, dead-end kids, like you and me.
There's only enough time remaining in this hole as there is left in the episode.
Yeah.
Very elegant situation here.
Yeah, so they duck behind a rock, and an adult version of this baby comes around and is very excited to find the baby. This is one happy mama.
And I love life! Do you love life?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of this puppet?
I mean, like, I wanted to talk to one of these characters. I feel the same way as you. Like, if they'd been able to get them up on view screen or something and been like, hey, sorry for the confusion. We thought this planet was empty. Didn't realize it's where you lay your eggs. That would have been nice. I would have liked to see one of them talking.
Shut your filthy bird mouth.
Yeah, you do, eh?
Because all we get is like...
Paris tries to Zephyrum Cochran this alien and just gets mutilated on the spot.
Yeah.
Does not go well, this first contact here.
Yeah, and Neelix is like, boy, I'm glad he lilied me.
Cut to Voyager leaving the atmosphere with two bodies on the ground playing the Ooby Dooby song by Roy Orbison. One of those weird Star Trek episodes.
Yeah. We lose two main cast characters, but kind of amazing.
They beam away before the parent alien breaks the child's neck after smelling Neelix's pheromones on him. So that's tough.
We'll have to assume that that was how it would have gone anyways.
Hope the other two eggs will be welcomed into the family.
A joyful reunion between Kes and Neelix in the transporter room. She gives him a big kiss despite his really off-putting facial rashes.
Yeah, that's how you know it's love.
Yeah. He and Tom Paris are buddies. The three of them are off to go share a bottle together, and presumably, one thing leads to another, and Paris and Kes do get to have a sexual dalliance just with Neelix there also.
I mean, you know what the French are famous for.
Yeah. You know what Paris is famous for.
Yeah. Gonna go do it on the pool table at Sandrine's. Gonna go fit some balls in pockets.
And that's the episode, Adam. Did you like this one?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullets, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
I did kind of like it. I mean, it's very, like, it's a silly episode, but it's fun. I think good character development on Paris and Neelix. I think it feels like the end of a chapter with the jealous Neelix stuff, which I think was getting a little long in the tooth.
That's behind us now, right?
I really hope it is. Like, if it's not, bad choice by the writers group, but it really feels like they are, over the last two episodes, like, kind of finishing up the arc on that. So,
mm-hmm.
And very fun direction by Frakes, some really nice compositions. And I'm pro puppet, so I'm here for the whole thing.
Yeah. You are pro puppet, aren't you?
I really am.
I don't want to say that the quality of the episode rests on the puppet, but I think the quality of the episode rests on how much you're vibing with the tone of it. Like, this episode tells you fairly early on that it's going to be silly.
Yeah.
Don't take me too seriously. I'm going to be rolling around on the floor covered in spaghetti sauce.
Yeah.
And so having experience that early on, maybe you're able to process the whole puppet thing a little better later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's intentional. Like, set me up with the marinara, knock me down with the puppet. And in that way, I don't hate this episode, and I don't think it's bad. And what's more, I want more episodes like this.
Yeah.
I want to meet more weird aliens. I want to land on more planets.
The weirder, the better.
Isn't it weird that this show is very not Alien of the Week?
Yeah.
Not at all.
So far, not.
And I could use a little bit more of that in my Star Trek lately.
Yeah. Fun episode. Do you want to see what the priority one messages of the week are, Adam?
Sure do. I'm going to go crack open that egg and see what kind of gross P1 spill out.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Then our first priority one message is of a commercial nature, and it goes like this.
Well,
studies show that Greatest Gen viewers are down. For a podcast recapping a reboot of a retro property with a freakishly familiar format. Are you karate kidding me? Follows the Cobra Kai Netflix series and the Karate Kid movies. Yes, all of them.
Wow.
Hosts Jenny and Colin are your tour guides through the Miyagi-verse, asking the questions that really matter, like, do kicks get chicks? How often can you fake your death? Is Karate Kid canonical Back to the Future?
Wow.
You too can become a friend of Miyagi. So to join this particular away team, subscribe to Are You Karate Kidding Me? On Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice, or hit us up on Twitter at Karate Kid Pod. This is from Jenny and Colin.
Wow.
The hosts of Are You Karate Kidding Me?
Are You Karate Kidding Me?
I love that Netflix show, by the way. Cobra Kai is big, big fun.
I have only heard good things about that show, but I have not watched. Yeah. Do you think I need to rewatch original movies to get into it?
I mean, I watched the original movies religiously as a kid, and so I didn't go back to them. I think they were fairly baked into my psyche in such a way that I didn't need to. If you're unfamiliar with the Karate Kid expanded universe,
yeah,
maybe it does that thing where it's very self-aware of itself and its cheesiness, and it knows exactly how to play with itself and its characters.
Oh,
given
fun.
That. I think it's really good.
Well, maybe the
like
way for me to do it is to just go along in order with, Are You Karate Kidding Me?
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. You watch the Cobra Kai show on Netflix, and then you subscribe to Are You Karate Kidding Me?
Adam, our next priority one message is from Michael, and it's to Cooper, and it goes like this. Crazy how sitting at the same table at a group job interview turned into a solid friendship, and the sharing of Star Trek podcasts from one slightly embarrassed airplane nerd to another.
Nice.
Hope we can see GGK3:STIV live together once everything calms down. Happy, probably very belated birthday.
May you never forget it, like I, Kern, did.
Wow. July 16th was the target date on that, and we got real close. So Michael was wise and got the order in way ahead of time.
Yeah, nice work, Michael. Boy, group job interview.
Oof, I did one of those once. Did not get job.
Yeah, they didn't mention whether they got job, but it sounds like they got friend.
They got friend, and that's better than job most of the time.
Yeah. Ben, our final priority one message is from Jacob. It's to Benjamin and Adam-jamin. The message goes like this. I started viewing your podcast sometime in 2018, and I'm still catching up.
Whoa.
You've given my brain some friends to talk to as I watch through the Star Treks for the first time.
Wow.
It's 2021, and I'm just getting to your 2020 episodes. Good luck, past you. Thanks for being you. Pour one out for Ro Laren. Love, from South Korea. Jacob doing a P1 from far away.
Wow. Thank you, Jacob.
And still working through the back catalog. That's fun. So this is going to... Jacob's going to find this one later.
I feel like South Korea has like the greatest pop culture of any country right now. And it feels like a real honor for someone that lives there to be listening to our silly podcast, you know?
Yeah.
I think we are as good as any K-pop group at this point.
We've got an army. They're the Friends of DeSoto.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to get a Priority One message, no matter where in the world you are, you head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Book it now. Get it locked in for 2022.
Yeah, put it in an egg and wait for it to hatch.
Yeah, there's special nutrients in the vapor over here that will keep it alive.
Oh, I bet you've got nutrients in the vapor over there, Ben.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I mean, Neelix is the instigator of the food fight, so I've got to give it to him. Like, that he crosses the marinara line and starts this war. He makes it a hot war between them that has been cold for too long.
I think that you're right. Like, Neelix boiling over was such a dam-breaking... It felt like such a long time coming. Like in any other context in Star Trek, a character acting that out of control, you'd have been like, oh, they're under the influence of an alien force or something in the ship's life support system is like causing everyone to be hostile to each other or something. But like with Neelix, it like feels really justified. To the extent that everyone else in the mess hall like does not try and get involved and like break up the fight. They're like, oh, yeah, they got to have this out.
Yeah.
There was something very funny about all the people that were watching and, like, not upset, really. Like, they were like, here it goes.
There's probably some replicator currency being traded in the background.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know Gaunt Gary is betting some francs.
Taking odds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Well, Adam, why don't you head to gach.biz/game where the Sword of Mornocles hangs over us, and I will tell you
it's
about...
It's going to be up to me, isn't it?
Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Episode 8, Persistence of Vision. A mysterious force puts the crew in a delusional state that causes their most deeply buried thoughts and desires... to surface.
Did you say and desires?
And desires. Yeah, this is really some Naked Now vibes from this episode, Cap.
I was thinking the same thing. Are we going to get a Voyager Shimoda?
If we got a Voyager Shimoda, if there's a new Shimoda, that would mean Shimoda doesn't get mentioned in The Greatest Discovery or The Greatest Generation anymore.
We cannot allow that.
We might not have a choice, Adam.
I know. Wow.
We didn't have a choice when Edward Larkin showed up.
I feel like this is a significant moment ahead.
And the significance with which we will be watching it is governed by the dice that you have in your hands right now.
This is almost too much to take.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
One square ahead. The space butthole dragging us back down into an nth degree episode. Three episodes ahead. Lies Mornhammered.
Fuck.
Any roll greater than a three gets us Mornhammered. A one sends us down to nth degree. A two is the only roll that can spare us from certain doom. Very next episode. Ben, the die is in my hand. I will now roll that die.
There's, like, you're playing it up like there's lots of tension, but there's, like, really very little tension because the outcome is all but certain.
Ben, I have rolled a four.
Wow.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
It has thrown me all the way to square one.
Jumped us over.
We're not doing Mornhammered, man.
Wow.
That's not how this game works.
It took rolling
the dice to realize it. But a four, just one after our 100th square, the Mournhammered Square, back to one is where we are.
Man,
back to one in a regular old episode.
I am shocked. I'm relieved.
I bet people are going to be very surprised by this. I'm very surprised by this. I didn't think that's how the game worked.
I didn't think it was how the game worked either.
Wow.
Man.
I did it.
You did it. Well done, Adam.
Okay. I did not think that this show could continue to surprise me.
Yeah.
And it does. I'm just so happy to not be doing a Mournhammered episode next.
Yeah.
Happy and grateful, almost as grateful as I am to the Friends of DeSoto who make this show possible. Friends of DeSoto, go to MaximumFun.org/join and pay for the episodes they consume there by signing up for a membership.
They do. Sign up to support the show, keep it going, get tons of great bonus content. I think we're going to be putting some extra bonus episodes in that feed pretty soon.
We going to go back to the Santa Monica Mountains? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think we got to do a Santa Monica Mountains episode sometime soon.
Mm.
So keep your eyes peeled for that.
I'll be ready.
I would say the same, but I wouldn't be able to hit the notes.
I know.
Hey, thanks to Bill Tilley, our social media director, for running the @GreatestTrek accounts on Instagram and Twitter and moderating our Twitch feeds when we do those, and just being a great dude and really like one of the biggest boosters of the show out there.
You know, a lot of talk this episode about red sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Red sauce and pasta. You know who could really guide you through the journey of making what some people call the mother sauce on your stove?
What people in The Sopranos call gravy.
A sauce that will dazzle your friends and family were you to make it.
Were you to have friends and family.
Adam Ragusa, the master of all things culinary, is there to teach you how to do it. Teach all of us, really, how to make all the great foods.
He sure is.
Including red sauce.
Go to YouTube, search for Adam Ragusa. He also made the original theme music for the program, riffing off the Picard song by Dark Materia. And with that, we will be back at ya next time with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that is a little worried about retiring the drunk Shimoda drop.
It'll never happen. Not on my watch. Not gonna happen.
Well, that's great. We won't leave them with any suspense, Adam. Showmanship. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.